You're listening to Kentucky Running, presented by John's Run Walk Shop in Lexington. Help others find this show by rating, reviewing, and subscribing in your podcast app. This episode is sponsored by Curex Insoles.
Hey runners, thanks for tuning in. I'm Matt Reno, and today we're talking hydration. Kentucky summers can be somewhat brutal, what with the heat, humidity, and of course the hills, but it's worth it when those fall races roll around, right? When you're cruising toward a PR at the Iron Horse this October, you'll be glad you pushed through those sweaty summer runs. But of course, you have to pay extra attention to hydration this time of year. That's why in this episode, we're talking to Lance Bollinger. He's an associate professor in the Department of Kinesiology and Health Promotion at the University of Kentucky. Today, Lance is going to provide valuable information on how proper hydration can keep you safe and improve your running performance. But first, I want to remind you that if you're looking for a crew to run with this summer, we have Saturday morning long runs happening every week at John's Run Walk Shop on South Ashland Avenue. Meet us at 7 a.m. for 6 or more miles. All paces are welcome. We got a really fun group, very encouraging people. So if you need someone to help get you through some grossly humid days, meet up with us. Get more info at the Run With Us section of johnsrunwalkshop.com. Now, let's talk hydration with Professor Lance Bollinger from the University of Kentucky. Lance, welcome to the Kentucky Running Podcast. Thanks for being on. And for our listeners who might not be familiar with your work, could you give us a brief description of your background and your expertise in exercise physiology?
Yeah, sure thing, Matt. Thanks for having me. Excited to be here today. I'm a PhD in bioenergetics and exercise science. I work at University of Kentucky, where I research all things exercise, but primarily from a muscle standpoint. But I like to teach classes on exercise interventions, as well as sport nutrition. And hydration is one of those topics that we frequently circle back to. And as someone who does enjoy long distance running, and as someone who sweats a lot, I very much appreciate the importance of hydration.
Definitely something that every runner knows is important, but they might not have all the best information about hydration. So that's what we're going to get into today. We're going to focus on how you can optimize your health and performance through proper hydration. With your personal experience as a runner, how has that influenced your research and your teaching in terms of hydration during training and racing?
Yes, we think about fatigue. There are lots of different things that cause fatigue. In someone who's a sprinter, hydration doesn't play as big a role. But when we think about fatigue specifically with long distance running, you know, we think about things like depleting carbohydrates. And one of our other big mechanisms of fatigue is actually dehydration and the elevated body temperature that comes from becoming dehydrated. I've experienced this myself numerous times personally, just running through those hot, humid summer days in Kentucky, where it becomes much harder to complete that workout. But I'm always thankful when the fall runs around and the temperatures cool down and feels like you can fly because you're so much better at that temperature regulation. So, you know, on a personal level, it's affected me a lot in terms of how I train. But from an academic perspective, it's fun for me at least to track hydration throughout a run, try to figure out sweat rates and how to optimize fueling and water intake.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of fall running, but to get there, you got to slog through the heat. So let's dive into a fundamental question for a lot of runners: water versus sports drinks. When is one preferable over the other?
That's a question we get a lot. And, you know, I think there's also a component to think about in terms of the duration of exercise that someone's doing. So we know that if you're exercising less than half an hour, your body really doesn't have a lot of time to take in that hydration as you're exercising. Still important to hydrate beforehand, but during exercise, we don't worry as much about hydration. The advantage to using something like a sports drink is that it contains sodium that's also lost through your sweat that you don't get with water. Not only that, it carries the carbohydrates, and that sodium and the carbohydrate content can really help your body absorb more water. So typically, if someone's exercising over an hour, that's when we start preferring something like a sports drink, because it's going to have the added hydrating benefits of the sodium to help you retain more water. And that's also going to stimulate you to be thirstier. That sodium actually keeps you thirsty, so you keep drinking more water. So usually it's about that 60-minute mark of exercise that we start preferring to use a sports drink.
What if you're running for less than 60 minutes, but it's at a much higher intensity?
Yeah.
Is Or does it depend on the temperature that's outside as well? Like, do those factor in and change the equation?
There's a lot that's going to factor in. The duration of exercise, obviously, the longer you're out there, the more fluid you're going to be losing. The intensity of exercise, you know, the more intense you exercise, the more heat your body's producing, the more it has to cool itself by sweating and letting that sweat evaporate. So all of those things do come into play. But typically, you know, if we're thinking of recommendations that are coming from organizations like American College of Sports Medicine, usually around that 60-minute mark is when we start preferring to use a sports drink. And they don't make as much distinction in terms of intensity. But certainly if someone is inclined, you know, we can do some body weight measurements before and after exercise and try to calculate what that individual sweat rate is. And that might give us a little more individualized approach to their hydration and let us determine for that individual, should they be drinking a sports drink, even though the exercise is shorter than that 60-minute mark.
Okay. Are there any common misperceptions that you hear from runners about the benefits or the drawbacks of sports drinks?
The most common thing we run into is individuals who have really bought into water specifically and are doing very long races. So ultra marathoners who are relatively small, and usually those ultra marathoners who are relatively slow, individuals who maybe aren't sweating as much and they're taking in loads and loads and loads of water. Occasionally they'll run into things like dilutional hydroencephalopathy, where they've actually given themselves hyponatremia. They've diluted out the sodium content. Those are pretty rare cases, but that's probably the most extreme case I see people really having this misconception about sports drink versus water.
So I'm going back to when I was at UK. I actually wrote a paper about sports drinks, the effects on children, and from a marketing perspective, you know, the images that we see, say example, Gatorade, Powerade commercials.
Yeah.
You see athletes using it, but the message isn't it has nothing to do with the 60 minutes or what kind of activity you're doing. And we see a lot of kids just thinking, oh, this is good for me. I'm just going to drink this all the time. And a lot of parents don't know either. Is this an issue that you see in general society?
Yeah, I think the concern going beyond just the pediatric element is the carbohydrate content. Oftentimes, for health reasons, we do like to avoid simple sugars, especially in beverages. And when we're talking about a sports drink, we're talking about a drink that specifically has a lot of added sugar. But the intention there is that you're taking that in at a time when you're expending a lot of energy, and that energy is coming from carbohydrates. The carbohydrates that are there are really designed to prevent you from depleting your stored carbohydrates. And so if we do have someone who's consuming these beverages all day long and they're not exerting themselves, they're not turning over those carbohydrate stores, then yeah, we're adding way too many simple sugars to their diet. And that's a problem.
Absolutely. And that's it's a tough message to get across to kids, especially when that stuff tastes so good.
Yeah, right. It's formulated to taste good, right?
Right.
And sugar does taste good to most of us. So it can be tough to wrestle with that. But there's a time and place for the sports drinks, but we do need to keep that messaging consistent as far as, you know, it's there for a purpose. It's to provide the energy that we're really using as we're exercising.
Right. Let's talk about individual needs based on sweat rates. So that can very significantly. How can runners get a better understanding of their individual sweat losses during exercise?
Sweat rates are a fun thing to think about. You know, it's a little disgusting in some people when you think about just how large those numbers are. But what we do see is that as individuals train, one thing that happens to better cool yourself is your body actually starts sweating at a lower exercise intensity, and it starts sweating more profusely. So as people do get exercise trained, they sweat more. And that's especially true in the summertime. We can develop hydration plans on an individual level. And the easiest way to do that is to measure body weight. As we're exercising, any one exercise session, we're not going to lose much weight from fat loss. So most of that weight that you've lost during an exercise session is really coming from water that you're sweating out. So what I do is void your bladder before exercise, weigh yourself, and then go out, hit the road or the trail, whatever it is, come back, void your bladder, and weigh yourself again. And the difference in that body weight, that's primarily going to be what you've lost as sweat. I like to use a metric system. As a scientist, we know that every liter of water weighs 1 kilogram. So if we measure weight in kilograms, we know how many liters have been lost. But we can convert that to pounds and gallons if you want to. Sweat rates vary a lot, and people who are highly trained tend to sweat more. People who run faster tend to sweat more than people who run a little bit slower. I've seen sweat rates as high as 3 liters per hour, 3 quarts of fluid being lost in an hour of exercise in most extreme cases.
Wow.
And so, you know, that's 6 pounds of fluid that someone's losing, right? And we've got to be able to replenish that after exercise. And not only that, but we need to replenish actually more than has been lost during exercise. And that can be tough to do.
I want to take a quick break to tell you about Kentucky Running sponsor Curex insoles, available at John's Run Walkshop. Whether you're looking for more cushion or arch support when you're running or just going through your day-to-day activities, Curex Run Pro insoles could be the solution you need. They offer flexible support and shock-absorbing cushioning from heel to toe, helping reduce fatigue, preventing common running injuries, and boosting performance. Dynamic arch support with a deep decoupled heel cup fits, wraps, and locks the heel in place to improve stability, reduce pressure, and provide a perfect fit. Curex Run Pro insoles feature a zero heel drop, providing the best fit in most running shoes with optimized motion for all running foot strikes. And they help manage moisture with a mesh top layer and premium foam cushioning to keep your feet dry and your running shoes fresh. They come in 3 profiles, high, medium, and low, to fit your individual arch type. Next time you're in John's Run Walkshop, ask us to check out your arches and knee alignment so we can help you find the right pair of Curex Run Pro insoles for you. Learn more at johnsrunwalkshop.com/insoles. Any physiological cues that runners should be aware of while they're out there that might indicate they're not hydrating adequately?
So when we're tracking that loss in hydration by body weight, we try to minimize that. And we want people to lose less than 2% of their body weight. Anytime you get above a 2% loss in body weight, that's when people start feeling thirsty. So dogmatically, we say, if you're feeling thirsty, you're already dehydrated. So that's kind of your first physiological cue that you're becoming dehydrated. But with even that 2% loss of body weight, exercise capacity is down somewhere around 7 to 8% already. And that's when you're first feeling that onset of sweat. Of course, as people progress through those levels of dehydration, once you get somewhere around 5% body weight loss, and we start seeing a little bit more physiological symptoms, inability to focus, loss of coordination. Most severe cases, you know, we're looking at muscle spasms. As people are progressing through there, we'll see people, they start developing that progressive dehydration. They'll start sweating more and more and more as they're getting progressing from, as they're developing heat illnesses like heat exhaustion. And certainly at that point, we really need to think about stopping exercise. And if someone actually stops sweating, they need to stop immediately because they basically can't sweat anymore and their body temperature is getting way too high.
And I just want to reiterate that point because it is so important. If you're thirsty, you're already getting dehydrated. So be proactive. Think about drinking water beforehand, during your run. Very important.
Yeah. Usually we say 500 milliliters, which is going to be around a pint of fluid an hour before exercise. If you're going to be exercising very long, you know, another 10, 15 minutes beforehand, drink another pint before you go out.
And when you're voiding your bladder, as you so politely put it, is it true that the color can give you an indication as to whether you've been drinking enough water?
Yeah, yeah. I say it should be paler than a Pilsner. So if you're getting any darker than that Pilsner colored beer, you're already dehydrated. But we want it to be relatively clear. We do need to keep in mind, and this becomes important with exercise, you know, if we're tracking by urine color itself, that's really reflective of your hydration status several minutes ago to an hour ago. It's not really indicative of what's happening right now because it takes time for your kidneys to filter that out. And so judging by urine color, urine gravity, we have a little bit of a delayed response. When we are, you know, actively engaged in exercise or immediately after exercise, usually we can get a little better response by using something like a change in body weight. But that's assuming that you started exercise in that you hydrated state where you were already properly hydrated.
Post-run, what is the rehydration process ideally? Like, when should it start and how long does it last before you can say someone's fully rehydrated?
We often make these recommendations and we can flex these a little bit, but you know, if we're thinking from a performance aspect, we need to start rehydrating immediately. Your body is much better at rehydrating immediately. If you wait a little bit, that process tends to be delayed. We do know that as you drink water, you increase urine production, even if you're dehydrated. So we really want to replace 150% of whatever fluid you lost. So we want to replenish 50% more than what you lost. And ideally within 2 hours completing an exercise, you should have consumed 150% of whatever it is that you sweated out. So if you tracked your body weight loss and you lost 2 kilograms, you should be drinking 3 liters of water to replenish that. And that can be tough to do. So oftentimes, you know, if we're looking for someone to rebound, return to hydration, we've got that 2 hour window. And I think that becomes really important for individuals that are doing more of these multi-stage race efforts. I believe today is the start of the mini miles for Malachi Run, where people are running 4 hours, 4 miles every 4 hours, you know, so you're getting dehydrated from one bout of exercise. You need to be rehydrated before that next bout. And I think that accelerated rehydration plan becomes particularly important in those cases.
What about ultra runners? What advice would you have for them who are running way more than 60 minutes, like 60 minutes times 20?
Yeah, right. That's an area I don't have direct personal experience. I'm trying to train towards that. But, you know, when we are thinking of individuals in those cases, if we're thinking about fluid loss and we're thinking someone sweating 1 to 2 liters per hour, it's very, very hard to keep up with hydration as you're competing. If you're losing 2 liters of water in an hour, no one can really replenish at that rate and absorb water. And so I think it's particularly important to hydrate before exercise in those cases. And I think it's helpful to hydrate frequently and to include some sodium as you're rehydrating. So a lot of ultra courses, you'll see people snacking on salty snacks, and that will help your body reabsorb that water. So as the kidneys are filtering the fluid, they'll reabsorb more of that water to prevent dehydration from increased urine output. I think that becomes more important for those individuals.
So because we're here in Kentucky and temperatures are getting warmer, and of course, more humidity is going to be rolling in very soon, how does hydration play a role in managing body temperature?
You know, we have lots of ways that we transfer heat. Keep in mind, our bodies are 98 degrees. Rarely is the air around us ever 98 degrees. We're always trying to give off heat to the environment. At rest, you know, we do that primarily through our skin, radiating heat, convection, conduction. But during exercise, our primary way to regulate temperature is by sweating and letting that sweat evaporate. And that has some important implications, right? If the sweat's not evaporating in those humid conditions, we're really not getting that cooling effect. And so that's why we really want to make sure we're exercising in a cooler environment, cooler times of day, so we can maximize that evaporative cooling. We never really adapt to being dehydrated. We can adapt to higher temperatures, but we do that by actually sweating more. And so if we're not able to sweat, we're not able to evaporate, we can't cool our bodies. And as we raise body temperature up, we do see impacts on exercise performance.
Yeah, specifically, what kind of impacts does hydration or lack of hydration have on performance?
As we become dehydrated, we're losing fluid. So we actually end up pulling that fluid from the plasma volume of blood. And so if you're looking at exercise performance, if you just track heart rate over time, you'll notice that at any given workload, your heart rate ends up being higher. When you're in that dehydrated state, it's hard for you to deliver oxygen to those working tissues because you're having to circulate and pump that blood faster. And a lot of that blood is then going to the skin to help cool, and you're getting less oxygen delivery to the muscles.
Well, Lance, you've given us a lot of great information. I hope people pay attention to it, especially this summer, but also during the winter and other times of year. Hydration is not just important in the summer. You have to remember it when the temperatures are colder and you're not necessarily thinking about how thirsty you are. So what are some tips for winter running?
Oh, I was expecting that this time of year, but I sweat a lot. Even in the winter, I'll come back covered in sweat. And, you know, if we think about, you know, that evaporative cooling, what's really dictating how much you can evaporate is that local humidity between your skin and your clothes. In the wintertime, if we bundle up with loads of jackets, we're basically trapping in all that humidity, and we can't really use that evaporative cooling mechanism as much. So we're still sweating, we're still becoming dehydrated, but we're not getting really the cooling benefits of that. And so, especially as people are bundled up in the wintertime, they may be sweating just as much, but not really thinking about it. Still important to hydrate, even in the wintertime.
You've run quite a few marathons, right? Has there ever been a time when you felt the impact of proper hydration, or maybe a time when you weren't so well hydrated?
Yeah, most often what I obviously recognize it in terms of thirst, and you can see, you know, my clothes getting progressively soaked throughout the race, but especially cramping at the end of a race, or I distinctly remember at the end of, you know, a shorter triathlon, looking and seeing my calf muscles just twitching afterwards. And some of that is dehydration, some of that is changes in the electrolyte balance. So there are some impacts that occur in terms of not only how we're regulating temperature, but also in terms of our ability to coordinate muscle contractions. If people get really progressively dehydrated, they can run into those muscle cramps or muscle spasms as they get progressively more dehydrated. And that becomes more concerning and more dangerous from a health perspective rather than just a performance perspective.
Well, Lance, again, thank you. Appreciate all this information. And by the way, I see you're wearing an Iron Horse shirt. So I hope to see you there again this year. Love to have you back on the show again sometime. Talk about other topics.
Yeah, that'd be a lot of fun. Anything related to exercise physiology, I'm always up for a good discussion about it.
Lots of good info there from Lance. Really appreciate him coming on the show. Hydration is definitely something most of us runners need to pay more attention to. In fact, as I'm editing this podcast, I'm drinking another coffee when I should probably be drinking water, so I include myself in that statement. By the way, if you need to stock up on hydration or nutrition products, head to John's Run Workshop. We have Sword Drink Mix, a great alternative to sugary sports drinks, or try Salt Stick Chews. They're an easy way to make sure you're getting enough sodium during a run. And again, summer long runs can sometimes suck, but running with a group can make them suck less. So join us for a Saturday long run starting at 7 a.m. at our store in the Chevy Chase area. Until next time, I'm Matt Reno. Thanks for listening. Please help others find this show by rating, reviewing, and subscribing. We'll talk again soon on Kentucky Running.